Everyone. That's right. This is Nocturnal Confessions. I'm David DeLauro here with Gabrielle Faust.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back.
Yes, welcome back. We survived Texas Frightmare Weekend.
Yes, we did. Barely. My God, that was insanity. I have never seen so many people in the basement of a hotel in my entire life. I mean, thousands of people.
Almost sounds like a fire hazard waiting to happen.
Seriously. Well, it's just like, you know, I made a comment to someone that Texas Frightmare has now turned into the South by Southwest of the horror world.
Yeah, I saw that on your Twitter, and then I was repeating that to other people. They're
yeah.
Like, I believe that.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I remember when Texas Frightmare started up a few years ago, you know, and it was like this really awesome little convention, and now it's this amazing freaking convention with thousands of people.
I know. Saturday was insane. You couldn't walk through the lobby.
No, you really couldn't. I was trying to get I was just trying to get from one end of the hall to the other, and I just about had a panic attack because literally there was just like wall-to-wall people going in all directions. It was
yeah.
like a New York subway.
Yeah, people with claustrophobic problems would not be happy there.
Mm-mm,
and considering
no.
the fans of horror, I can imagine there would be a few freakouts happening.
Right. Well, I mean, you slice in there all of the crazy costumes that we saw. I mean, people dressed up as Leatherface and Freddy Krueger and all the other greats, you know, and Jason. And oh, I saw one, the guys who, what was it? Oh, 13th Ghost, that movie. And it was incredible. This guy had actually recreated the entire, like, headgear and everything that this one particular ghost in the movie had, and it was terrifying. But being wedged up against him, between him, a zombie, and a killer clown, when I'm trying to, like, get down the hall to try to get to a panel was a little unnerving.
Just a little bit. It, at least you knew there were people in costume.
Right.
But if somebody was just all of a sudden turning the corner and they had no idea what was going on, you're like, oh, shit.
Like, where am I?
Yeah, in fact, I think I might have told you, like, you know, the hotel is sort of out of place for this kind of thing. It's all nice and pretty and clean. And
it's
then you have all
hotel.
These, and then you have all these people runged down and horrific looking.
I know, like, all these zombies staggering around. And
like, if you, there was some
people
kind of
covered in blood with half their faces ripped off.
Yeah, if there was some giant mansion somewhere, that would be an awesome place to do it.
Yeah, yeah, but it could not accommodate that many people.
No way. Yeah, I'm sure. I was seeing some of the Hilton staff as soon as it was over. I was like, oh, shit.
I know. I mean, well, hell.
Not
when
the
I
Hilton
got
Hyatt.
No, right.
Sorry.
Sorry, guys. Yeah, I mean, when I saw Lloyd Cryer on Friday, he's the organizer of the event. He was already yawning and looking kind of bleary-eyed after, you know, an entire year of organizing this kind of massive scale production. But, you know, I am always just blown away at how calm he stays. Like, this is, like we said, thousands of people. There's all these celebrities that came in. I mean, the whole cast, almost the whole cast of The Walking Dead was there.
Well,
we had
a couple of them.
Couple
I think several haven't had to cancel.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I couldn't get in there to actually see them.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I only saw a couple of them. They're like kind of, well, there's a huge line for what's his name, Shane from The Walking Dead. And
oh,
then
yeah.
The kid. he was kind of off in the corner by the restroom. So that's how I knew he was there. It's like I was walking in the restroom. I was like, hey, it's the kid from Walking Dead.
Oh, and I heard he didn't have much of a line, which was kind of sad.
Well, on Saturday he did.
Oh, good.
When I saw him.
Oh, good.
Sunday he wasn't around. So who knows? Yeah, it's like, I think for me, and even you too, like I was really there for business, so I didn't really get to really notice what was going on in terms of who's there, who's doing what.
Right. I mean, we were set up in the dealer's room most of the weekend, and then I was attempting unsuccessfully with my press badge to try to get a couple of interviews for Gothic Beauty magazine from a couple of different actors, and that proved proved impossible. I chased managers all weekend. And because these lines, there was, Sean Patrick Flannery and John Bernthal, they were both there, and they had on Friday and Saturday and part of Sunday, they had lines stretching, I don't know how long, from 10 a.m. until 9 p.m. They signed photos the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And like, what do they do? They go take a piss.
Right. Exactly. You know,
I had to go cut through the line. I was like, I didn't want to leave the table for too long.
Right.
I really got to go, man.
Exactly.
And then I'm cutting through the line. It's like, man, I wonder how this guy's doing it.
I know. Well, I mean, they have their handlers and they have their managers. And there was, you know, the Secret Service guys there, you know, to make sure everybody didn't manhandle the celebrities. And mm-hmm. But,
yes, because celebrities are better than us.
But hey, I may not be an A or B or even a C-list celebrity, but hey.
A double A.
That comes double after, A.
That comes after Z.
A double A celebrity. That's better than D-list. I love it. I'm going to start using that. I'm a double A-list celebrity.
Yeah, you know, you can think about all the letters of the alphabet in terms of the popularity and notoriety. Z would be the ultimate, but no, double A comes after Z. Like, not a lot of people know who you are, but people know who you are.
Yeah, you know, I had, you know, several people come by my table and go, I didn't know you were going to be here. I'm like, well, I didn't really either until like a week ago. yeah, because originally what I was going up there to do was... we had the Blood Games short horror film competition, which for the High Stakes Vampire Anthology, which came out in March. When I was back in the early days of the project, I started talking to the guys over at Popcorn Horror, and Popcorn Horror is an application. It actually won the best new application, I believe, in 2011 at the South by Southwest Multimedia Festival, and it is all about indie horror and filmmakers and fans can talk about their projects and like stuff and put up poster art and all this really cool stuff that you can download onto your phone. So I started talking to them and I said, hey, you know, you want to do some cross promotion? Let's dream up something cool. And we came up with a little short international short horror film competition called Blood Games. And obviously all about games and horror. And we screened the top three finalists at Texas Frightmare Weekend, which was really incredible. And the winner was Don't Move by this UK production company called Bloody Cuts. And it was phenomenal. I mean, everybody in the room cheered and all that stuff. I mean, it was great. I really wish they could have been there. That was sad. Like, none of the filmmakers could actually afford the trip over here because they were all from overseas.
Yeah, and I don't know what the prices are for international airfare, but I imagine they're not too cheap.
No. I mean, heck, between that and hotel and food and, you know, it gets really expensive, especially when you're just an artist, you know, trying
to... Yeah, I was barely able to break even on just my booth setup alone.
Oh, wow.
That's not counting the hotel and my travel expenses.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I luckily broke even, plus I made some, which was awesome, so... That was probably the best convention experience as a vendor than I've ever had. But, yeah, I originally didn't even expect to have a table, but we ended up having a table for the Blood Game stuff and for the Awesome Vampire Ball stuff. And I ended up spending a lot of time in the dealer's room. And it was probably a good thing because I had absolutely no luck getting into any of the panels.
Yeah, otherwise you would just be sitting in the in your room or just leave out. Or you didn't stay at the hotel, so you're
no.
like, screw this, I'm leaving.
Yeah, I know. No, I mean, it was great. I was taking photos, and they're all up on my Facebook page the whole weekend of all the great stuff that was going on. And just being, for me, being in an environment like that around all of these horror fans, it gets me so excited about writing horror because I see how many people are so dedicated to this genre. I mean, they live it, they breathe it, they have so much fun with it. And unlike a lot of conventions that you go to science fiction conventions and fantasy conventions, and it's a very different atmosphere. They're still really excited, but horror fans are geeks. Like, not geeks as in nerds. They can't sort of. But they're geeks, and then they find it all so amusing, and mm-hmm. they don't take themselves seriously,
yeah, because,
or they shouldn't be taking themselves
yeah,
seriously.
Yeah, you know, horror is one of those things that, like, that laughs at the face of death.
Yes, exactly.
And if you can accept death, hey, everything else is like,
everything else
whatever.
Is easy. Yeah, after that. Yeah, exactly. And another thing that I find in the horror industry, and this has been true for writing, art, film, all aspects of the horror world, is that people in the horror industry are really, really eager to help each other. Like, whether it is helping you unload boxes or helping you on your next project or cross-promoting, or like, people are really eager to collaborate and to assist one another. And it's really motivating to, like, go into something like that and then get that kind of reception. And everybody's really excited about their projects, and everybody's talking, everybody's laughing, and everybody's having a good time. They're drinking and celebrating. And, like, because of a convention like that is kind of, you know, validation, I guess, mm-hmm. for all of the hard work, especially
yeah.
for, like, actors and filmmakers and writers and
yeah,
artists.
And it's almost a culmination of an entire year, like, because,
yeah.
excuse me, it's like, because everybody goes to the convention every year, and you have the same group of people that you see every year, so it's like a reunion and a party all wrapped up into one.
Exactly. It's like I just ran into person after person after person I hadn't seen forever, and vendors I hadn't seen since last year's convention, and everybody is just, they're in celebration mode of look at what we did and look at all these people who just came out, and they're spending their hard-earned money, and they're here to celebrate with us, and this is why we do what we do. Mm-hmm. Like, this right here, these fans are the reason we do what we do. Because without the fans, well, it's like that with anything, but without the fans, there's, you know.
You're just some person in your house writing or making art.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and in fact, this is my first convention experience because, you know, even though I've been doing
really?
It for, yeah.
I'm surprised.
Well, in terms of a formal experience, I've done things like open studios and other sorts of events
huh.
where I've vended, but like in terms of a convention.
Oh, wow. I hadn't yeah. realized
so
that.
So this was basically like a trial run to see, like, hey, how's this thing going to work out?
Because, yeah.
you know, like, even though I've been around for a while, it's, you know, still need to grow an audience.
Yeah,
get,
absolutely.
Introduce my
get
work
new
to new people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I had a really great reaction throughout the weekend.
Oh, good.
You know, people were like, wow. I was like, this is amazing.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I also get some new feedback and reactions.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like, my work is not quite horror.
No.
I fit
it's
in
macabre.
I fit in so many different areas that, like, even for me, it's like, do I fit in here? Do I fit in there? Do I fit in there? So, like, I just wanted to try this Texas horror convention and
yeah.
and see how it works out.
Yeah. Yeah, your work it's very dark and it's very macabre, but I've only seen a couple of your paintings where I've gone, well, that could be, you know, maybe like the severed head pieces could be horror based, but mm-hmm. yeah, they're more elegant, almost like Tim Burton-esque, that whole dark macabre,
yeah.
you know,
and
look
people,
to
people
it.
People are like one comment I got, it's different and unique.
That's like one of the best compliments you can
yeah.
get.
And then, but part of me is like, well, that's both good and bad. Because,
why?
You know, because oftentimes people don't want to go with what's new or different and unfamiliar.
Yeah, but I mean,
getting out of the safe zone.
Well, but you're not at Ethan Allen Furniture. Yeah. You're at the horror convention. Yeah. That's what people are looking for. They're looking for what is the most interesting, different, weird thing I can find in here. That's what they're looking for. Especially when it comes to art and like home decor. People who really get into decorating their house, like Delara Land, say here, they're looking for stuff to fit into that aesthetic.
Yeah, in fact, some people are like looking through prints, is like lining them up, like, does this look good next to this one?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that looks really good next to the light. And you got a black and white and on the ends. You got a color one in the center. It's like they all frame each other, look well. Just get a nice, simple frame. Yeah, it looks good.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was going to ask you how your art was received.
Yeah, well, I was surprised that some things sold more than others. And then, but, you know, it's just like every kind of event like this is a learning experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Because each audience is different. It's like, this works good here, this works good there.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's always good, too, because, like, to have a good convention experience like this, it's really motivating to continue on and continue to do conventions.
Yeah. Well, the thing about conventions is, like I said, I was only able to barely break even on the cost of the table.
Yeah.
So, like, part of me is, like, seeing this, let's see this, like, how this can work out. So now I'm thinking maybe I can handle some of the conventions around Texas instead of traveling
and spending much more. Yeah. And there's a lot of tricks to it. It's like you don't have to stay at the official hotel. Mm-hmm. Like this one was sold out. Like I tried to book a room. Of course, I waited until Thursday night to try to do that, which was kind of stupid. But, you know, it's like I called up the hotel and they're like, we're sold out. And I'm like, every single room? They're like, yep, we are completely sold out.
You should have asked me. I had an extra bed.
Oh, well, didn't think about that. Oh, well.
Next time.
C'est la vie. Exactly. C'est la vie. World horror.
Oh, that's right.
I still have no freaking clue how I'm getting there.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm going to the World Horror Convention next month in New Orleans.
Oh, I thought you booked a table there.
No, I didn't book a table.
Oh.
I'm in the art show.
Oh.
So basically all I'm going to do, or all I am obligated to do, is to ship off my work, and that's it.
But your art will be featured there.
Yeah.
So.
And in fact, what they're doing, which I think is seems a little odd for me, coming from exhibiting in art shows, like they're not going to be selling their work, they're doing a silent auction.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, I'm thinking about all the conventions I've ever been to, and that is kind of standard at a lot of, basically what they'll do is you'll set a price, there'll be a minimum price,
and then
people will bid on it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so.
So I probably won't be sending any original work because I do not sell anything less than what it's worth.
Exactly.
So I'm looking into getting something printed on canvas.
There you go.
Pricing some of the places around here. Some of the local
G-Clay
guys.
The G-Clay prints.
Yeah, G-Clay, maybe printed on canvas because, you know,
those
you don't want
nice.
To. Yeah, printed on canvas is better because, you know, if you get something printed on paper, you got to frame it to
exactly.
make it look good because I'm a professional that way.
Exactly. Yeah, going back to convention sales, Rhiannon, I was sitting next to Rhiannon Frater, a good friend of mine and wonderful horror author that we actually had on here not too long ago. And she and I were both remarking at how good book sales were. And for a while, we've been a little discouraged with other conventions because people just, and granted, the economy has been crap. I mean, it's been crap for like a couple of years now, 3 or 4 years now. But people were avidly buying books. They were walking up. Sometimes they wouldn't even ask what the book was about. They'd just pick it up and go, I want this. Or is this short stories? Great, I'll take it. Like they weren't even really interested in what the books were about. They were just buying books in mass.
They're just like, books, get your books.
It was crazy. Like, I was like, wow, I wish every convention was like this.
I know. Actually, I
freaking do one a week.
Yeah, and speaking of books, I brought mine out of retirement. I stopped selling it last year because it was out of date because it only went up to 2010. And also it had my old website address printed in it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So I decided to, like, you know, try it
sure.
and bring the box out of the closet, take it with me. And actually, the book is sold more than anything else.
Oh, see? That's great. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Hopefully no one tries to go to that website.
No, well, it redirects to my new one.
Oh, well, there you go.
Because I'm smart that way.
You're a smart cookie, David DeLara.
I'm smarter than the average bear.
How smart is the average bear?
Dumber than me.
Well, there you go. There's your stick, your measuring stick.
But they got a good deal on the book. It's a collection of work from 2005 to 2010. 30
oh,
bucks.
Cool. Nice.
I forget how many pages, but hey.
I need to do something like that with my artwork. I'm working right now on, and I need, that's, there's so many things on my to-do list. I can't even deal with my to-do list right now. But I am actually trying to get 10 new paintings done by the end of the month so I can have an in-home art show my closest friends, and 30 of my closest friends. And it's really incredible. I'm finally getting back into painting. I have the space to paint now. Mm-hmm. And all of this, we're not going to get into it, but all of this great emotional stuff.
I was let it out, do something with it.
Exactly.
Let some paint fly.
There is nothing like going through stressful situations to go, I'm going to write 15 poems this week and do 3 paintings and write 2 songs and work on a book and do this. And so it's been a very productive artistic month.
Nice.
So.
Yeah, I'm actually hoping to start a new painting next week. I've had several planned out since probably late last year.
Any particular theme or?
Well, I got some. Well, nothing particular theme, but I don't want to give it away.
Oh, so mysterious.
Yes, but of course you can keep up with it on my website.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, I actually posted some of the reference photos that I'm planning to use. Yeah.
Well, there you go, people. You can go and look on daviddelara.com and see what he's about to venture down.
Yeah, because
what extraordinary image he's going to use.
Because years ago, I think 2006 to maybe 2008 was my most prolific period, where I was almost doing a new painting every 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think that was about, I'm going to say 2004 to 2008. I was doing art shows in Houston every other week. So I was churning out 4 or 5 paintings a week sometimes just to get the stuff, and granted, they were more abstract. They were very simplistic and everything, but I was churning out just a gargantuan amount of work.
Yeah. And for me, it was because I was in the studio a lot more.
Yeah, exactly.
I was, had to work all day, get out of work at 5, go home, get something to eat, go to the studio all night until I'm ready for bed.
Yeah.
And then I think what got me was getting a house, so that threw me off.
It threw you off. Your routine was broken. See, that's the thing. It's since I moved into this new apartment, I've been trying to get a routine down and trying to move the furniture so that it feels right. So today I finally, I moved everything all over again, except the coffin, which we moved for my photo shoot last week, and it took 2 people to move it, and now it's kind of just stuck there. So it needs to be moved. But everything else, I finally cleared out some space. I got a great arts area set up. There's canvases. I've got my latest painting, which I'm going to attempt to attack tonight. And then, another painting started, a little painting started over here, and all my art supplies are everywhere. And it's just great. It's epic. It's nice. So
yeah,
I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm on track to probably do at least 1 painting a month this year. I missed April, but that's all right, because I was also doing lots of photo editing during that time, releasing some new work there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it's painting is a lot more time-consuming. It takes more dedication, especially since I work with oils. I can't work as fast as I used to with acrylics.
See, that's it. I mean, I work with acrylics, so I can do a painting in, 2 days. If I'm really, focused on it, I can do it in, sometimes even a day I can do it And because I work real loose, I've got a real, you know, just, you've seen my work. It's real loose. It's very impressionistic looking. Whereas yours is very detailed. It's oil. Yeah. It's all very, you know, all shading and everything is perfect.
From,
so.
I think from around 2010, my entire technique as far as how I use oils became much more refined.
Right.
So it's going to take me at least a month to do a piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and that's that. I just don't have the patience for it. I can't. I'm like, dry, damn it. Why aren't you drying? Yeah. I don't want to rework you. See, and that's also another thing with oils. I am very, very, I'm very indecisive about stuff. So I need to commit to something. And if paint does not dry very quickly within an hour or two, I'm going to keep fucking with it. I'm just going to keep fucking with it until it's completely screwed up. But if it's dry, then I'm like, well, that's done. Moving on now.
Yeah.
So.
In fact, actually, this while I was waiting for one oil painting to dry in the middle of the process, I started another painting with acrylics, and I got that done before I even finished the oil painting.
Oh, art. Yeah. Well, speaking of art, did you stop by? I cannot remember the name of the vendor. Oh, I even wrote it down. Like, I typed it on my Facebook page because people were asking me about it. But there was one particular vendor at Texas Frightmare that had, we were talking earlier before the show about all the pickled fetuses. And
oh, yeah.
All that. But he had these amazing sculptures made out of bones. And it was in the other trade show room. But it was absolutely incredible. There were these just – he basically taken bones from all different sorts of animals and, like, reconstructed them to look like these weird alien creatures, like the remains of some weird alien creature. And it was just absolutely incredible. I took a picture and put it on my Facebook page if anybody's interested in checking that out.
Go stalk her on Facebook.
Yeah, basically everybody else does. but, yeah, it's like, this is an art form that I've always been fascinated by. Not so much like that, the weird pickle.
No pickled animals.
No, I'm not into the whole.
Or not pickled formaldehyde.
No, I mean, do want a framed vampire bat, you know, the dead ones that are behind glass. Like, I want one of those for my bathroom.
Mm-hmm. It's
freaking awesome. But the whole, like, things in jars just...
Yeah, this isn't a isn't a mad scientist's office or house or whatever.
No, I just, it's beyond, like, I write horror, and it's just a little too beyond my sensibilities, where it's a little too macabre for me.
You don't
want to
look over to something and say, hey, that used to be alive.
Yeah, and it's just like kind of like they deconstruct. They don't really deconstruct over time, but they get more gelatinous looking over time.
Yeah,
and sitting in that formaldehyde.
I mean,
and it's
because,
like,
it kind of keeps it from decaying quickly, but it's still decaying.
Yeah, everything continues to decay over time. There is no stopping decay. It's just slewing it down.
Yeah,
it's like over at Kitty's house, Kitty Corbett. Yes. In her bathroom, she's got a couple of these things, and there's this, like, little, I guess it's a baby shark or a little bitty shark, and it's in this tall cylindrical vial, and it's right on her bathroom counter. So if you walk in, and here's this, like, dead pickled shark, and I'm like, hi, you look uncomfortable in there, and now I'm really uncomfortable. Because it's just, it's odd. It's like everything else. It's like skulls, vertebrae, all that kind of great stuff. Stuffed, like, taxidermy, even though taxidermy to me is still a little like, ugh. Okay.
It's always people, they get the bear stuffed in an attack position.
Animals are always in some sort of unnatural looking position when they taxidermy. They're all like doing some weird dance, or they're like in attack mode with their teeth all bared, and I'm just like, that looks and then there's the people who taxidermy their pets and make them look like they're sleeping, which I think is probably the creepiest thing of all.
Yeah, some people have a hard time letting go.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, if it's like the bone sculptures, though, I find bones absolutely gorgeous. And like all the new jewelry that's like, I believe Obscuria is one of the local designers. They have all of these, like the bird skulls and the necklaces. Mm-hmm. And that is all absolutely gorgeous. And these incredible sculptures that this guy was doing was just absolutely amazing. And I don't know, when do you think all of this really started? Because it seems like it's gotten really prolific. Like the whole art of death has always been around, but it's been...
But as far as actually using dead parts, you mean?
Yeah, it's been...
Or bones, anyway.
Yeah, bones and feathers and things like that. Seems like it's like within the last 5 to 10 years, it's just become this amazing fashion trend and art trend.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't really pinpoint when I first really saw it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back. I mean, it's always been around, but I think probably around, I don't know, five years ago, I really started noticing more and more people. Like I'd walk into more shops and there would be more taxidermied things and there'd be more pickled things in jars. And it's really become this interesting trend in the home decor world that, well, at least in the rock and roll and the goth aesthetic.
Yeah.
To have more...
A little morbid things around.
Yeah, and not just morbid, but like real reminders of death and decay.
Memento mori.
Mm-hmm. Memento mori. Exactly.
Yeah, it's like I have a small collection of skulls, but they're not real skulls. One used to be filled with vodka, one used to be filled with tequila, and another one is just filled with ash. Because it's an ashtray, you just take it off the top of the head.
Oh, there was one of the products I'm working on getting into the Nightshade Vampire Boutique right now is there is this company called Skull Asylum, and they actually take real human skulls. I'm going to assume they are, you know...
Somebody signed a release.
Yes, someone signed a release. They are getting these, you know, legally. But they are taking these skulls and making these amazing, like, creepy purses out of them. Like, you pull the top of the skull up, and there's, like, you know, a little pouch inside. And then they also have jewelry boxes made out of these human skulls. And, you know,
I just thought of something.
What?
Like, turn a skull into almost like a Pez dispenser. Where you just pop the head back and the jaw opens up and there's like some candy or whatever there in the tongue.
That's kind of cool. That's a cool idea. You should work on that.
Nobody do it. This is recorded.
That's right. Copyrighted right now. Haha. I forgot what I copyrighted last time. But
I don't know. But it's recorded now, whatever time it is, on May 5th. No, 6th.
6th. What day is it? I don't know.
Monday, May 6th, 2013. 7:32 p.m. Central Time.
There you go.
Yeah. That was my idea. It's recorded, so I won't forget.
We need to, like, keep track of all these things we keep copywriting on here and, like, make a list so that we can actually go and do these things because it's going to start getting kind of long.
Like, well, this right here is my new notebook of ideas.
Oh, yes, from the Girly Review.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then this fat piece of...
Holy Moses.
Filled thing with nothing but ripped out sheets of paper and post-it notes. In fact, I have...
Idea books.
In fact, it's almost a collection of hotel stationery, of places I've been to. I'll just wake up in the middle of the night, oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, I've done that before. I usually try to keep it all in one notebook, though, but like, that's an interesting idea. Sorry, I'm like thinking now, I'm like, ooh, that would make for an interesting sketch pad. And it's like, okay, ADHD, come back to where I was talking about before.
Yeah, people are listening.
Yes, I know. I was like, use your inside voice, Gabrielle.
It's like, did I say that or just think it?
I do that all the time in the grocery store. Now I just stare at people when they stare at me back. But that the whole idea of the skull purse made me start thinking this afternoon. Like, I just read... Christian Day's Witch's Book of the Dead, which is all about necromancy. And not necromancy as in, like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, we're going to bring the dead back from the grave physically and, like, control them and all. We're not talking that kind of sorcery. No, this is more of communicating with the other side. And talking to the dead in a way that you can get messages from the other side, whether it is asking them questions or seeking advice, or it's kind of like what a psychic does in communicating with the dead, but this is with intent and purpose, and it's, you know, it's incredible. This is a wonderful read. I highly, highly recommend the book for anyone who's interested in it. But
what was the title again?
The Witch's Book of the Dead.
There you go.
I think you can get it. Oh, hexwitch.com probably has it. But the idea is you, for this kind of ceremony, for these kind of practices, you really do need a human skull on your altar, because a human skull is the way the dead communicate. It's the portal. It's the communication tools. Our eyes, our ears, all of our senses are contained within the skull.
Not to mention the brain used to be there, and that's the whole thing, basically.
Exactly. That's the motherboard. It's right there. So the idea is, like, a half of a human skull, like without the bottom jaw, you'll be able to communicate, but there will be no power of speech. It'll come through in visions and other types of ways of communicating with the dead. With the bottom jaw attached to the skull, then you can actually get verbal communication from this skull. And so the idea of having a purse that's a skull, and you're carrying the skull around with you all the time, just kind of made me start wondering how this might work. Are you going to start getting messages from your purse? It's like, or your jewelry box, or...
Yeah.
Yeah, just the idea just made me start wondering about it. But, oh.
And then who knows, one day we'll get to the point where, like, there's like, it's not, it's almost like, oh, who's your purse?
Right.
It's not like, who made your purse? It's like, who did your purse used to be?
Exactly. Get dental records off of your purse. Oh, well, this is Susan so-and-so, and, well, she was this, and she was a nurse, and she had six kids, and she lived from 1979 to this. You know, it's going to be interesting.
And now she holds my money.
And now she holds my lipstick and my tampons.
You with her.
Awkward pause.
I didn't want to be the one to say anything dirty. I already have a bad enough reputation as being the dirty guy.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I cracked myself up. But it's true. you know?
Well, I didn't. Since I'm not a girl, I don't know what goes in purses.
You don't want to know. Oh. There's a whole lot of crap that goes into a woman's purse. It's kind of scary. Guys should probably just stay out of them. Although mine's very organized. It's very organized. Although if you open up one side of it, my purse kind of looks like it's all leather and covered in studs and kind of looks like a human heart because it's red leather. And it has two side pockets. And on one side, I have all of my, like, magical pouches. Like, I've got one pouch that is full of different stones for, you know, prosperity and grounding and centering and all these different purposes. And then I've got one that's filled with coffin nails, and that's left over from New Orleans. But it's coffin nails are used for protection, to ward off that negativity and to protect you when you're out and about. And, yeah, I have all of these different, like, little silk pouches full of all these different things. And then I have this other little pouch, which I have been carrying around since college. And over time, I have just continually put little things in there that are, and it's for my travel. I never travel anywhere without this thing. It goes in my carry-on bag or in my purse, and I do not fly without this thing because it has and I'm pagan, but my mom gave me a Saint Christopher medal back when she still thought I was going to be Christian,
Catholic or something.
Catholic.
Well, Catholics have all the things.
My mom's Episcopalian, so it's kind of like a diet Catholic, you know. She called herself an Episcopalian in recovery, so I don't even know what the fuck that means. But she gave me this medal, so I was like, oh, but, you know, it's the intent behind it, you know.
It's the intention
behind it, exactly. So that went in there, and all these different things. So, like, if somebody opens up that pouch, they're going to be like, what the heck is all, okay, nails and stones and metals and...
They're like, listen, they all have a reason for being in there.
Exactly, and so just leave them in there and don't look in there.
It's like, yeah, don't...
Don't touch it.
Yeah, that's the stories that TSA agent could tell after that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, luckily I've never had my bags inspected. But for a while there when I was traveling, like I would also be doing photo shoots, traveling around with weird things. Like,
right.
Besides the lighting equipment, they're like, why the hell do you have... for example, I would also take a sock monkey.
A sock monkey? just a random sock monkey.
Yeah, for a while there, I was doing photo shoots and just tossing a random sock monkey.
Sure, why not?
It lasted a little while.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, I mean...
Like, then you got stuff like bondage tape and straps and other stuff. It's like, what the hell?
And it's like, and where are you going? On vacation.
It was an erotic art festival.
We're just going to zip that back up. Yeah, when I went to New Orleans this past time, all of my stuff, I got little love notes from the TSA. I got one in my guitar case, and I got one in my luggage. I got tossed, is what they call it. And I don't know what set them off, but they decided to toss my luggage. Which is really creepy when you think about strange people touching your underwear and rifling through your belongings. It's just kind of like, ew. But what's funny is, and I actually learned this trick from my old roommates, Sean and Shauna. And Shauna was a Celtic harpist, or she is a Celtic harpist. And at the time, she was like, well, a great tip is, you know, use your underwear to... help pad your guitar
mm-hmm.
or your musical instrument. So this past time I had like all my underwear in there, you know, and of course with musical instruments, you have a 90% chance that the TSA is going to open it up because it's got metal in it.
Yeah.
You know,
they're not going to take any chances.
They've all seen Desperado. They remember the false lid on the guitar that lifted up and there were 17 guns and 3 grenades. And
movies ruin all those tricks.
I know, damn it.
Can't get away with nothing anymore.
I can't get away with anything anymore, goddamn Desperado.
Gotta find a tuba case.
Gotta find a tuba case.
It's like nobody ever...
Get a lot of shit in the tuba case.
Yeah, they always go for the guitar case because, you know, just...
It's sexy.
Yeah, guitar's got that bad boy reputation.
Exactly.
But tuba.
Tuba.
Dork.
All the tuba. We just alienated every tuba player out there.
I don't mean it.
Tubas are sexy, too.
You could be, you know, that you're that one little speck in the field in the marching band.
Right. You're the guy with or the girl with the big tuba. But, yeah, anyway, going back to the guitar case, you know, I had corsets in there, and I was like, oh, well, I'll throw in my leather gloves, and I'll throw in, you know, I'll put like some like leather masks down underneath and all the stuff. And of course, you know, I open up my suitcase when I get to the hotel. There's a little love note from the TSA officers in there. And I'm just thinking, I wonder what went through their brains when they opened my guitar case. Just like, oh, I want to go where she's going. Or he's going.
Oh, yeah. TSA agent. I can only imagine the stories they tell. I mean, there is a TV show about luggage handlers at airports. I forget what channel it's on.
Oh yeah,
but
it's
I've
on
never
the
watched.
History Channel.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's about the luggage or luggage wars. I think is what it's called. You know, all the baggage that is.
Oh yeah, that's unclaimed. Now I remember it.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But man, I don't know if they ever tell stories in that show, but I could imagine there's some few that would just. Be unbelievable.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure the stuff that you find in luggage is absolutely insane. Of course, I always flash back to the Fight Club scene, you know, the vibrating luggage, you know, and all that stuff.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Speaking of vibrating luggage, I've also had to...
It's like, oh, that reminds me.
Well, for some reason, I always get free dildos and vibrators.
Let's clarify. They're new, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Like you buy a certain amount of merchandise at the festival store. You're like, here, you get a free one of these things. It has 5 speeds.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Like,
I gotta start going to these types of conventions.
Like, what am I supposed to do with this?
They're like, use your imagination.
I don't
need one of these.
I would hurt myself.
Right.
I haven't been broken in properly to use this. I mean, people are surprised genuinely a kinkster.
You're right. It's like, you know, I'm into all the leather, but that, okay, that's a little much.
Yeah, I have a FetLife account I don't even use.
People keep asking me why I don't have a FetLife account. I'm like, why do I need a FetLife account? I don't need one. Like, why? I would never use it. Like, I'm not going to go online.
Besides,
like, even though I get kinky, I'm not going to go online looking for people to get kinky with.
And besides, a lot of those people in the kink community are, like, probably older, and you're like, don't want to get involved with that. It's like, I just feel a little bit weird about this.
Yes. Well, and it's just, you know, it's like, I have a different opinion about the whole kinkster and S&M scene. It's just like, for me, back when I was really in the S&M scene, it was more like a close-knit group.
Yeah. You have
instead of just random strangers. It's like, it's because it's all about trust. It's all about
trust.
Yeah,
this is not like Match.com.
No. No.
You don't.
This is not OkCupid.
Yeah. You're like, hey, I'm looking for somebody who might have some anal beads and nipple clamps.
So what are you doing Friday? I'll bring the candle wax. Yeah, it's a little different. It's a little different. And, you know, I had somebody ask me again recently about it. I was like, no, I'm not on FetLife. Nope, you're not going to find me there. You're not going to find me on any of the singles network. Sorry. I have enough problems meeting people, rational people, face-to-face, let alone online.
I know, and then those online meetings after you meet in person the first time, that's so much pressure.
Oh, yeah, and it's just like 9 times out of 10, everyone's lied about everything. And it's just like, okay, well, this is not what I was expecting. Okay, no.
Yeah.
I'd rather just meet, if I'm going to, like, I am a creep magnet, and I am a weirdo magnet. I just, if there is a psychotic person in the room, I'm going to look at them and probably, like, out of, like, a crowd of people, I'll pick the most fucked up person in the room and be like, you look awesome, let's go out. Like, I don't need any help from a dating service to pick creeps and weirdos.
It's
I can do it just great on my own, face-to-face.
Like, women, they just need to go out in the street. Like me, I can usually get the kind of attention I want from women once they find out what I do and I have some talent.
Right.
It's like their ears start to perk up as I get that bright smile on their face. It's like,
oh, you're an artist.
Ooh.
Will you paint me?
Well, I don't know about that. What are you doing later? In fact,
it's true. I mean, women have an artist. We have a weakness, excuse me, for artists. We do. I think it's that way with every woman. And I think musicians, well, some of us more than others. I was actually talking to my friend Kelly when I was up in Dallas. You know, my vamp sister up there. Love you, girl. I miss you. And we were talking about our major weakness for artists, and especially performing artists.
There's just some kind of aura for anybody who's on stage, bigger than life. It's like you have to look up 4 feet higher than you usually do to look at them.
Yeah, and there's also, I mean, it's that way with fine artists as well. It's that, oh, your art is, you created that.
It's like, you created that from nothing.
Exactly, from nothing.
And then,
and that's your soul on a canvas, and then, oh my God.
And then with photography, you're like, ooh, he can photograph me and make me good, look
exactly.
good forever.
Oh, he can preserve my prettiness forever. Yes, exactly. It's just, and I'm sorry, I know there's girls out there who are probably going, I don't have an artist obsession. Yes, you do.
Like,
you just don't know one yet, then.
Yeah, or you just don't know anybody who's that good.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and I also, that reminds me of an experience over the weekend. I was just sitting at my booth, just kind of watching people go by, kind of glancing over. And there was this one, she's actually a model from Dallas. And she just saw my name and was like, oh, David DeLara.
Awesome. Yes. So you made a good connection, maybe a photographer?
Yeah, hopefully eventually soon.
Oh, Blanco, the show cat has arrived.
Yeah, that's the thing about this underground online model community. Everybody seems to know everybody.
Yeah.
Or if you've worked with somebody else, they'll know your name and they'll know your work.
It's very true. Yeah, it's very true. It's a very small world that we work in. It's amazing how everybody seems to know everybody else. And
yeah. In fact,
it almost gets a little incestuous sometimes.
In fact, I credit me working with models who are from all over for getting my name and my work out there more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I can only do so much on my own.
Indeed. Indeed. And it's like that with the writing community, too. It's just like our readers are the ones who get the word out. And they're the ones who go out and talk about us and all that kind of craziness. So, but yeah. So going back to Texas Frightmare, did you have any celebrity moments? Did you meet anybody? Did you have something awkward happen in the bathroom? I don't know. Tell me.
Well, I think one of those guys, I think, what was the guy from Boondock Saints?
Oh, Sean Patrick Flannery?
Yeah, I had to get out of...
I had to hug him.
He had to get out of my way as I was walking back into the room.
Oh.
I was like, listen, there's a proper way to walk past people in a hallway. It's like, you go that way, I go this way.
Yeah, I almost like ran chest first. Well, that would have been awkward. The face first into him. That would have been really awesome, actually. In the hallway. Because he was like making a beeline for the hotel registration, like the desk, the front desk. And he just was like staring straight over my head because I'm only come up to about his collarbone. I'm so short. But yeah.
Yeah, and then another close encounter was with George the Animal Steel. He's a wrestler.
George the Animal Steel?
Yeah, he was a wrestler from the, like, I think he retired in the late 80s, but then he went on to do movies. He was in Ed Wood.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
I forgot about that. I didn't get to see him.
Yeah, he was, like, he had his little setup couple rows down from me, and I had a gap in between booths, and I could see him over there, and I'm sure he could see me. And then after the convention was over, we were both going to the restaurant there in the lobby.
Oh.
Yeah, and I never said hello to him on weekend. I wasn't going to be like a fanboy. I was like, shake his hand and say, hello, sir, I'm a big fan.
Right?
but of course he saw me all weekend, and at the end, after it was over on Sunday, we're both going to the restaurant. I'm looking at the menu. We're both walking at the same time. He's like, hey, how's it going? Going good, sir.
Good. See, I like conventions. Like, I remember my very first ever Texas Frightmare, and this was like in 2006. And I remember, Doug Bradley was there. Tom Savini's always there. He is always at every horror convention. I'm pretty sure he makes his living off of just going to horror conventions. Tom Savini, Doug Bradley, Charles, his name just went right out of my head. He played the first sheriff. He played the sheriff in the very first ever Halloween movie. He was there, and he was like 65, 70 years old. And there were just all these people. And after, it was like probably about 7:30, 8 o'clock, I was down at the bar, and I was having a drink. And I look over, and, there's the sheriff sitting right next to me. We start talking and just shooting the breeze. Bruce Campbell walks in, sits down the other side. I look over, there's Doug Bradley, and we're all just buying drinks and talking. And just, I'm like, oh, my God.
It's like,
they're real people.
Yeah, celebrities.
This is so cool.
Yeah, celebrities are people just like us, except sometimes they're usually shorter than you thought they would be.
Yes, and they have more money sometimes.
Yeah. Well, some people might have blown it all, and they survive by going convention to convention.
Exactly. But yeah, it's like, it's so cool when you can just be like, hey, how's it going? Yeah, it's good. Good to see you today.
Yeah.
Having a good convention? Yeah, man. Yeah, awesome. See you. Cool.
Yeah.
Good luck today.
Yeah, and I've never been one of those people that go all starstruck and everything, freak out over celebrities. Like even always here during South by Southwest, there's like, hey, that's, what's his name?
And hey, look, it's Barry Farrell.
And then, yeah.
DJing at Red Eyed Fly. It's like, oh, that's random.
It's like, and then last week with the Moon Tower Festivals, all these comedians that I've been watching that day on TV, then passing them on the street. I was like, hey, they're real people.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't want to bother them, though, otherwise you're just that asshole.
Right, exactly. It's like a Dane, Danny Bonaducci came into the museum during South by Southwest. And I was just like, it's not like you're going to have a fangirl moment over Danny Bonaducci, because Lord, who's a fan of Danny Bonaducci? But, sorry, Danny, but it's true. But it's still kind of like, huh, look, it's Danny Bonaducci. Random. Cool. I just carded Danny Bonaducci. You know, it's like, I think it's part of growing up in Austin that you're just, it's no big deal. Like, and that's why celebrities come here, is that 9 times out of 10, people are not going to be like, oh my God.
Yeah, they can go out to dinner at a restaurant and nobody will bother them for an autograph or a picture.
Exactly. I mean, I was at Red Fez last year. I don't know, it was the year before last. I was hanging out with a bunch of my girlfriends, and in watched Matthew McConaughey. And we were all just like, hey, look, it's Matthew McConaughey. Cool. We just went back to our drinks. It was, yeah, okay, random, awesome, cool. He's got good taste in bars. Badass. You know, it was just, you know, it's just one of those things. And I think I've only had a couple of big fangirl moments. And that was when I met Doug Bradley. I kind of stalked him a little bit. You know, it's Hellraiser. I'm going to do that. Clive Barker and James O'Barr, creator of the Crow comic. I stalked him a little bit at Staple. But but even meeting Sean Patrick Flannery this weekend. Well, of course, yeah, I was all in business mode. Oh, hi, I'm with Gothic View Magazine. Ha ha.
I have press pass.
Yes, I have press pass. But even then, on the inside, I'm going, oh my God, it's a fucking Boondock Saint. This is the best day of my life. I still was just like cool about it. You know, it's just like he's just a guy working, and
it was like they were in the same position we were once.
Yeah.
Like before celebrity hit them.
Yeah, exactly. And they're artists. They're just artists.
Yeah, they're just trying to get a job.
Exactly.
And do this thing they love doing.
Yeah, it helps that he's amazingly beautiful in person and sweet and nice in person.
If anybody sees me in the street, you can stop me. I'll be okay with that.
No. Careful what you wish for.
Well, it helps that I don't go out a lot.
Well, there you go.
And I'm very incognito.
You're incognito, very mysterious.
Yes. That's the good thing about being a visual artist. You just work in the background. Nobody needs to know what you look like.
Exactly. And I'm a mysterious writer. No, I'm not mysterious at all. I'm a total dork.
Yes. And because, like, every profile picture that goes up online, I have total control over.
Yes.
So I'm able to create this image.
Yes, you kind of look like the dark gothic Hugh Hefner.
Oh, speaking of which, I need to do a new profile picture with that smoking jacket I got.
Yeah, definitely.
Got to plan that soon.
Yes, indeed. My recent photo shoot with Murphy Hunter, people are still talking about it. It's kind of scandalous. Ooh. Well, we only have, it's up on my Facebook page, everybody.
For everybody to see.
Yes, you can all go see my butt.
It's all part of the show. Don't ask to see that in person.
Exactly. Just like the pictures over and over again. Leave comments.
Yes. Give her some love.
Yes, I need love.
And give me some love, too. You can give me some love at daviddelara.com.
And you can find me at gabriellefaust.com or thenightshadeboutique.com.
Yes. And we'll be back again with another episode of Nocturnal Confessions. You can subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Like the page on Facebook.
You can also go to liveparanormal.com. You can hear the archives there. Or you can go to nightshadeboutique.com. And under the book section, there's a link to a Nocturnal Confessions page where there is a player. Mm-hmm. Where you can hear all of the episodes over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Yes, for those times when you're in your office cubicle on a long road trip or jogging, we'll be there with you.
Exactly. Always with you. Forever.
We'll be with you next time, baby.
Yes. Next time, Monday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. Until then. Good show. We're definitely getting better and better at this every time we do this.
Well, that's kind of awesome. Well, it just comes with experience. Mm-hmm. Like pretty soon,